morning, everyone. It is Tuesday, July 20, the Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio. Good morning, wherever you are listening. Marika Corabetti has got off at the judiciary. His red card rescinded. He is available for the Wallabies against the All Blacks in the Bledisloe Cup opener on August 7. Plenty of news surrounding the Bulldogs and Lachlan Lewis. He was fined $1,600 for that takedown of Cody Walker. $2,400 if he fights the charge and loses. Go back to reserve grade. Loz, morning to you, mate. That's apparently been the taunt that led to the takedown. Go back to the Reggies.
Yeah, oh, I've heard that plenty of times, especially early in my career. But morning to everybody. He just didn't control his emotions. He let it get the better of him. Young Lachlan Lewis, and obviously he struck a chord saying that to him, Cody Walker. But Lachlan Lewis, it was something that I've never seen before. I don't know whether we'll see it again. But again, Lachlan Lewis, he just got caught up. He was frustrated. And Cody Walker, in a little bit of a verbal battle with the reserve grade call, got Lachlan Lewis upset. He took him down. He got fined. I think that was the right call. I don't think he needed to be suspended for a week or two. Some people were calling for that. I think the NRL made a good decision. Talking about good decisions, wasn't it good to see Marika Corabetti let off overnight? And most people thought that was a very strange decision that the referee made on Saturday night up there at Suncorp Stadium. We spoke about it yesterday on the program, and the panel agreed with us that it was shoulder to shoulder. There wasn't much more in it than that. They said, you know, any contact to the chest and neck and head region was incidental, and they've allowed him now to play in the Bledisloe Cup, and we need him if we're going to beat the Kiwis because he's one of our better players, Marika Corabetti. He and Michael Hooper, for me, have been our best two players in that series.
Yeah, for sure. Those two and Taniela Tupou, certainly, though. Corabetti seems to give us our best attacking punch in that back line. Sanity prevails, thank goodness, there at the World Rugby Judiciary last night, because I was fearing the worst. But thankfully, he is available. Pup, morning to you, mate. How
morning,
are you?
Boys. Morning to our listeners. I'm well, thanks. How are you, Middo? Going. Doing well?
Good, thanks, mate.
Tuesday?
Yeah, going good. I was just going through the new sports for the games. Karate, skateboarding, sport climbing, surfing, baseball and softball, a few others as well. In existing sports, just a few other categories in existing sports. Don't you love with the games, Pup? You just find yourself there, sitting there watching the most random stuff.
Yep. So true. How true is that? You just got it on, and no matter what comes on. I'll tell you the thing that always seems to get me is the table tennis.
Yeah.
It's like you can't turn it off. Yet if somebody said, what are you doing on Friday night? Let's go watch table tennis on TV. You'd be like, I beg your pardon? But yeah, it's the Olympics, isn't it? It just has that... turn that telly on and you leave it on the whole time. I don't know. I'm not excited though, you know, to be honest. I just sit here and fear the worst. That's the only thing. Like, we've already seen athletes, support staff that have gone into, you know, their base in Tokyo with COVID. You know, people getting off an aeroplane and there's, you know, four people that have COVID. So, yeah, I fear the worst, but hopefully once it kicks off, if it kicks off, that excitement builds so we can, yeah, turn the tellies on and watch it.
At least ideal when we're in lockdown. It should rate through the roof, shouldn't it?
Yep.
Everyone's so sitting at home, you're just going to be, like I say, you're going to be drawn to sports you never watch. I love the weightlifting, Loz. You'd never watch it.
No.
Just watch these.
No, well, Clarky makes a good point. A lot of those sports, if you were sitting at home on a Friday or a Saturday night and someone said, let's go and watch this or turn it on, you'd put it on for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And then you'd switch it off. You'd find something else. But there's a lot of sports over there that people will be keen to see, but the weightlifting is pretty good. But you can't beat the swimming and you can't beat the athletics, can you? I mean, you know, when you look at the 100, 200, 400, those type of races on the track, and then you get the swimming events. They're pretty special every 4 years.
It's as good as it gets. By the way, I've been told our Friday legend this week, one of the greats, Kieran Perkins. Who arguably gave us our greatest ever Olympic moment in Atlanta in 96 when, against all the odds, from lane 8, won the 1500. I'll never forget that. That was his backs against the wall. He was written off.
I can tell you where I was. We were in the dressing sheds Canberra Raiders dressing sheds, preparing to train. It was a Saturday morning, and we stayed inside and watched it before we went out to train.
But you trained well.
We did, yeah. I don't think a lot of people thought that he could win. And he just, I think by memory, he just scraped into the final.
He did.
His time just got him in, yeah. And he was the last one to qualify. Mm. And I can remember we were supposed to train at a certain time, but the race was on and we just stayed inside and we watched it on the television. And everyone was screaming and cheering and then we went out to train, obviously. But, yeah, no, it was a moment where you knew where you were when Kieran Perkins won that 1500.
And I remember, actually, we spoke to Daniel Kowalski last year, who it was fascinating speaking to him because he suffered a lot of pain from not winning gold in that when he was expected to, with Kieran Perkins obviously not in his best form and seemingly past it heading into that final. And Kowalski said he really struggled to come to terms with not winning gold in that final, yet we all remember it for the unbelievable achievement by Perkins.
Yeah. Oh, well, it was a great performance by Kieran Perkins. And, you know, Daniel Kowalski was regarded as the favourite. And I think, you know, he was just struggling big time, Kieran Perkins, for whatever reason. Mm. So it'll be interesting when we talk to him to find out why he was struggling and then he was able to produce on the big day. He just lifted himself, got himself obviously mentally in a position that he was ready to compete and swim his best race of the Olympics. And he did that. And it was a race that obviously we all know now that was one of the greatest swims in Olympic history for Australians.
Certainly was. In fact, it all starts tomorrow, 10 a.m. our time. Australia takes on Japan in the softball. And there's been even a interesting build-up to that because over there, softball's massive. Softball and baseball are massive in Japan. Apparently, there's been fans trying to pose as media to get into the Australia team hotel to sort of, you know, interrogate them and see how they're shaping up ahead of playing their national heroes.
Informants. Wow. Well, I've heard
Did you say it starts in 2 days?
They
tomorrow.
So that's before the opening ceremony.
Yep. With football, this happens as well. For instance, Australia plays New Zealand, the Matildas, play on Wednesday night, 9:30 our time.
That makes sense.
Yep. So this particularly
all the
in the
time,
football.
Don't it?
Yeah. Yeah, in the football it has, and obviously softball and baseball being new, just because they've got, you know, you've got 2 weeks to get a pool session
games,
in, then a knockout stage in, so they have to start it early. So, yeah, all starts here tomorrow, 10 a.m. Australia, Japan in the softball. Go the Aussies.
Yeah.
Indeed. Did you see Mitchell Starc's comments yesterday, Clarkie?
What's he had to say?
Well, his direct quote to the media, "I've certainly got my own opinions that I'll keep to myself." His response to questioning on players unavailable for the current tour of the West Indies.
100%.
Ahead of the first one day of tomorrow in Barbados. Tomorrow morning, 4:30 our time.
Yeah, well said, Starkey. I know there's a number of players, staff members, people at Cricket Australia that are all extremely disappointed that people have turned down playing for their country but opted to play in the IPL. So I think Starkey's made that very clear. And I think he's in a very good position to do so as well. He plays all three formats. He's turned down millions of dollars at the IPL. He said no to going over there, you know, 3, 4, 5 years in a row so he could be home, get his body fit, get his mind fit to represent his country. So I think Starkey, probably more so than anybody else out of the Australian squad, is in a very fair position to voice his opinion on guys pulling out of representing their country. And, yeah, I think in the same breath, he's probably made the right decision in biting his tongue and not saying what he feels. You know, to look after his teammates, the players that haven't gone. But, yeah, I think sometimes less is more. And in this case, Starkey not saying anything, I think says a lot.
And he was also asked who captains the side, with Aaron Finch in doubt with a knee injury. The names he threw up were Matt Wade, Alex Carey, Moses Enriquez, Josh Hazlewood, all in contention there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Well, who was vice-captain of the tour? I can't remember who got. I think Wade's done it before. Alex Carey has been vice-captain before. Hazelwood's been vice-captain. And obviously Moses has had a lot of experience with New South Wales. He's captain New South Wales for plenty of games as well. So, yeah, they've got some options. Interesting, yeah. Well, again, this is another reason why, you know, you look at the players that haven't gone on the tour. The captain's out. You know, if Pat Cummins was there, for example, he'd take over the captaincy. Or if who else is missing? Steve Smith, Marnus Lamichane, all these guys that we're talking about that are dying for the opportunity to captain Australia. If and when Tim Payne and Aaron Finch either stand down or get dropped, you know, none of them are there to grab hold of this opportunity. So someone else will get it, and I'm sure they'll do a good job. But the Aussies also have to turn their form around. The T20s, they weren't great. Hopefully they can turn that around.
Oh, the market has them slight favourites. $1.80 with Tab, with the West Indies $2. That game, yeah, starts 4:30. We'll be updating you through the show tomorrow morning. Don't know if you caught the West Tigers documentary last night, fellas. By the way, Wild West's Tales from Tiger Town, a Fox Sports original production. The first episode, which went to air there last night on Fox League. It is available to watch on demand now on Foxtel and KO. And we will be speaking to Luke Garner later this morning. I had it on in the background there last night. Loz, did you catch it?
Yeah, I did. I watched a bit of it. I thought it was good. See another side of Michael Maguire. And obviously, you know, he's still trying to set a standard there at the Tigers. He's trying to create an identity for the team. He believes in the team, but the Tigers—they are just frustrating to watch. You know, there's still a chance to make the finals this year. They've got a good run home when you look at who they're playing and where they're placed on the ladder. There's a lot of teams they come up against that aren't playing finals and not in the top four, so you think there's a chance of winning some of those games, but it's still going to be a big ask. But, yeah, no, I enjoyed it. You know, you get to see what happens behind the scenes. I'm probably lucky that because you're in and around that, you've been in that change room, you know what happens and you know what goes on. But for a lot of other people that don't get up close and personal like that, they would have been very interested and keen to see what Maguire was like, to see how he spoke to the players, to see how the players respond. And I think it'd be uncomfortable too at the start to have cameras following you around everywhere, hanging on to every word that you say and having cameras in your face, although they, you know, they keep their distance, obviously. But no, I thought it was good. Really looking forward to seeing episode two.
The thing I took from it, Pup, and I think this is the same in just about every professional sporting side, but particularly the side like the West Tigers and those sides, you know, that have expectation to make finals that are struggling in the NRL at the moment, is the balance between giving your players a cuddle and a bake. And
yeah,
Michael
it's
Maguire,
hard balance, like, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, difficult, because you could just tell there at times Michael Maguire he just needed to make sure his players were okay.
Yeah, of course.
In the midst of a devastating loss.
Yeah, it's timing as well. If you know, straight after a game, it might be that support, and then you get to the first training session and the coach doesn't forget it. The players might forget it a bit, but the coach has still got it in his head, so they might have got a serve then. It's not my cup of tea, that type of stuff, because it's inside that change room. And Loz, you actually said it spot on. You put a camera in front of your face right now and you are a different person. You know, if you're on TV or you know something there, you cannot completely be yourself. And that's the only thing I worry about with shows like that. It's to sell. They're trying to sell a product as well. So I can see there's been cut and paste as well. So they've been able to pick the parts that they want to show, which in some instances is good for certain people. In others, it's not so good. So if you went to every individual player or staff member, they would want certain things taken out, but others would want it left in. And I think I saw that with that cricket one as well. I think you see it in the Michael Jordan documentary. Now, ask Scottie Pippen if he liked it. Yet you go and ask Michael Jordan, he loved it. So, I don't know. I just feel like there's always a risk. Unless you're doing it live, unless you go, rightio, this is, you see it all. It's open forum. There's no cut and paste, and you can have the whole lot. I feel like you're always going to pee people off. But as a Tigers fan, I think it was nice to see a bit more of Michael Maguire for the, you know, the fans that probably don't know him. And I think it showed him in a really good light. I think it showed him quite supportive. I think it showed that he's a very tactical coach and plans well. And I think it probably opened a lot of people's eyes to what's involved as a head coach of an NRL team.
Back page of the telly, go back to reserve grade. The taunt that led to Lewis' brain explosion, as we discussed earlier, that is apparently what was said that led to the takedown, the UFC or WWE-style takedown of Cody Walker by Lachlan Lewis, and that provoked the incident, along with some colourful language. And interesting, the Souths and the Dogs, they're both at the same hub on the Gold Coast as well. So that hopefully there's some... You know, they walked past each other, a couple of little sledges down the hallway.
Yeah, they would have had a laugh about it by now, I'm sure. I don't think too many people knew what was going on. It would have been a surprise for Cody Walker. The only person that knew what was happening would have been Lachlan Lewis. But obviously, when Cody mentioned reserve grade, Lachlan had had enough and he took Cody down, and they came from everywhere to try and sort them out. Got 10 minutes in the sin bin. I don't think he'll be doing that again. I think he needs to keep his emotions in check, Lachlan Lewis.
Especially if that's all that was said. He copped that every day as a youngster. Oh,
well, you just don't engage.
Really. I actually think Cody handled it really well in that when he was asked after the game as well. He said, look, whatever's happened, I don't know what's going on. Whatever's happened stays on the field. I actually think he handled that really well.
Mm. I agree with you, pup. As much as I'd love to know.
Well,
what happens on the field stays on the field, the old adage.
When you watch that, you think it must have been... He must have said something personal to him. That's what you think.
Yep.
But when, if you find out that's all that's been said, then, yeah, again, youngster, get used to it. Mm. And if that's affected you, guess what? It's coming again this week.
Back page of the Sydney Morning Herald, Tokyo Blues. And, well, Liz Cambage, she's officially under investigation by Basketball Australia for a breach of the integrity framework and code of conduct. Reports suggest she was... really marching to the beat of her own drum, to say the least, in camp before she quit. And Adam Pengilly has co-written this article. We'll speak to him later this morning to find out more of what's gone down there in that camp with the Opals ahead of Tokyo. Now, also on the back page of the Sydney Morning Herald today, Bulldogs news, big Bulldogs news as well. They snare Pengai Jr. on $2.2 million deal as buying spree continues is the headline. So... it emerged, Brent Reed initially reported from The Australian last night, the club was set to land Tevita Pengai for next season for 3 years. And then Michael Chemis broke this story that he did choose Canterbury over the West Tigers. And the Broncos have given him a release from the final year of his deal. So this is about $730,000 a year, Loz. Gus Phil Gould said last night on 100% footy, he wasn't involved in the discussions for Pengai Jr., but he would be a great signing. What are your thoughts on Tevita Pengai going to Canterbury?
If you get the good Tevita Pengai Jr. and the consistent Tevita Pengai Jr., you've picked up a good player. But if you get the inconsistent one, it's cost you a lot of money. That's the way I see it.
Would you sign him for that much?
No, I wouldn't sign him for that much money. He hasn't shown me that he can be consistently good. I think you see periods of games where he gets heavily involved and he looks a dominant back rower. But a change environment may help him. And if you throw in the Bulldogs, the recruitment, what they're doing for next year, you see them improving out of sight. They've got Matt Burton, you've got Addo Carr, you've got Naden, you've got Dufty, you've possibly got Paul Vaughan. So you throw him into that team, and he's at his best. He can provide impact, and he becomes a player that's significant in what they're trying to do, which is become a physical team, a creative team, and a team that, you know, won't be out-muscled by any opposition. And as I said, Tevita Pengai Jr. has had all this talent for a number of years, but he hasn't quite lived up to it consistently. Like most coaches, like most footy teams, they're hoping that a change of environment can bring out the best in a player. But again, if he can bring his best, he's worth it. But if he doesn't, you're paying him way overs.
Dogs fans, tell us what you think. 1353 53. Send us a text 0419 767 272. What do you think about the signing of Tevita Pengai Jr. on that money? Around $730,000 a year. Would you spend it elsewhere? How do you feel about the squad next year? Phil Gould, Trent Barrett, and Steve Hansen. It looks like things are taking shape there. At this moment, though, last on the ladder. A lot of work to do at that club.
Yeah, but you can see light at the end of the tunnel. You know, with all the signings that they've been able to get over the last 12 months, It's going to be a far different squad to this year. So they're just hanging on this year. They're trying hard. I think they proved that the other night against South Sydney. They're probably never going to win that game. They didn't have the composure in critical moments to come up with the big plays, but they're having a crack. And if they have a crack between now and the rest of the year, they don't have too many blowout score lines. It gives everyone a chance to reset, give the supporters, give the club plenty of hope. With Phil Gould now in charge there of recruitment and all things football, there's plenty of optimism around. And you throw in Steve Hansen, who's been a World Cup winning All Blacks coach. They've established a good front office. Things are starting to take place.
Operation Ashes puts Shield front and centre is an exclusive from Malcolm Conn on the back page of the Herald as well. So they're going to front load the Sheffield Shield, Clarkey. They're looking at playing 60% of the season before the first test at the Gabba, and it will start late September. And just reading between the lines of this, I think this is going to put pressure on the players inadvertently, those who have contracts in the IPL, to play some Sheffield Shield perhaps before going to camp for the 2020 World Cup.
No chance is Cricket Australia calling players back from IPL to play Shield Cricket.
No. Well, what I'm saying is they'll instead of going to the IPL, I think that the pressure will be on to make sure they're available for the Sheffield Shield and then go into play as much Sheffield Shield as possible before then heading to join the 2020 World Cup squad ahead of that tournament. Because that's the option they're going to have. Do you stay home and play Sheffield Shield
or go IPL.
And play IPL?
Yeah, well, you know what they're going to pick, though, don't you?
Of dollars.
That's exactly right. So what this is for is to make sure players that are not involved in IPL or the World Cup, the T20 World Cup, our first-class players, are playing the longest form of the game in preparation for the Ashes. You might see there might be one or two. Like if I think of, let's say, Steve Smith or Marnus Labuschagne, for example, I think they might be the only two selections, one of those players in regards to the 2020 World Cup, where the selectors might go, you know what, we're only going to play one of them in the 11, so let's not take him to the 2020 World Cup. Let's leave him in Sydney or leave him in Australia so they can play Sheffield Shield cricket in preparation for that first test match. But, you know, you think of all the big fish, they're still going to go. They're going to go IPL. They're going to go 2020 World Cup. And then they're just going to have to make sure they're ready to go for that first test match. And it's probably going to be harder for the bowlers. The bowlers, trying to get your workloads up is the key. Trying to be able to bowl. You go from playing 2020 cricket in the World Cup bowling four overs to then day one of the test, you lose the toss, you've got to bowl 25 overs. That's where you see so many players get injured. So I think that's going to be the greatest challenge.